Welcome to another episode, another adventure, another edition of my ongoing experiment to uplift humanity, one friggin' podcast at a time. Let's get to it. All right, I hope this finds you well. I know that we have subscribers in Scotland, and I hope you're faring well over there, lads and lasses. I know we have people listening in South Africa and in England, which has obviously been hit hard, as everywhere has, with the virus that will not be named unless absolutely necessary. I don't like to... Everybody knows what I'm talking about. I'm not going to add to it at all. About 2 weeks ago, I wrote a Wednesday rant about a poll that was done. Now, this is 2 weeks ago, remember. This is before the major onslaught has happened here in the United States. And there's a whole group of people that actually believed in this study. It was a smaller study, I'll give you that. It was about 800 people that actually thought the virus was attached to a certain beer that you would drink with a lime in it, if you get my drift. And I can't do much about that. But what I can do something about is to bring voices to the table and to your ears, no matter where you're listening, that makes sense out of the senseless, which is my ongoing mantra, you know, to make sense out of the senseless. And most importantly, I think, to find the obvious truths buried in the absurdity of our lives sometimes. And this virus that shall not be named reminds me a little bit about Jaws, right? There's the shark swimming around and everybody says, oh, there's no problem, no problem. He keeps swimming, the shark keeps eating, and then there's a problem. So we're not real quick sometimes on the uptake, even when the surf is turning red. And I think part of my challenge is doing podcasts that have some relevance without being way over the top, because I can tend to do that. I've always spoken my mind, whether I was on traditional terrestrial radio or on XM satellite radio or on my CBS podcast, and I sure don't pull any punches here. And so on one hand, I am heartbroken and devastated when I hear the numbers of those who have succumbed and lost their lives to this. And on the other hand, you know, there are so many lessons to be learned in all of this. And one of the big ones for me in my life has been the difference between reacting to something and responding to something. And then both of those have a different energy. And reaction to me is always, you know, there's nothing wrong with either one of them. Hear me out. I'm not saying one's better than the other, but I think that we have to be judicious in how we approach certain things. And in some ways, the reaction to all that's going on in the world has been kind of slow. The response now has upped itself because the reaction wasn't there. So there's a place for reaction. But when it comes to how we treat each other, and especially when it comes to unsocial media, which is, you know, how we stay connected because we're all on lockdown for the most part, there's a great opportunity in there. You know, I said this the other day, all we're being asked to do in the I wish I could say, see, even I have limits, but if I had Sam Jackson on here, all we're being asked to do is stay the fuck home. And even some people have a hard time with that. No one's going to tell me what to do. But what about the greater good? Doesn't matter. My needs are first. We're getting a lot of lessons in what matters most. You know, humans have a propensity to major in minor things. And when major things come along, we don't know what to do. We have a hard time. So I thought that one of the best voices that I could possibly offer the vast and worldwide Life 2.0 podcast audience was my friend, Dr. Robin Smith. And she's kind of been, you know, on the sidelines for about a decade. It's been pretty quiet in the Robin Smith camp. And she is reemerging, in my opinion, observation, and experience at exactly the right time. She's kind of been marinating off the side for a decade. And that's actually the last time she and I spoke. We first met when I was working on the Oprah Radio Project back in 2006. Back then it was called Oprah and Friends, and it was Dr. Robin, and it was Gene Chatsky, whose show I produced, and Mehmet Oz, and Gail King, who's kind of done okay for herself on CBS. Bob Green was in that lineup, a few other people. And it was a daunting task to take these incredibly talented human beings that all look incredibly brilliant sitting next to the amazing Oprah Winfrey on a television show with 25 million people, and then build radio shows around them. So Dr. Robin was one of the first of the inaugural launch that had that charge to go out, and those were our walking orders and our mandate to get that done. And she did a great job. Hundreds of shows that she hosted on the Oprah channel. And it was those conversations. I used to listen to her in the car. You know, as a producer, we're always listening to the shows to hear if they could be better, if we missed something like that. And I would get so drawn in to what Dr. Robin was saying when people called in that were in such difficulty. 10 years ago, we were in a shitload of trouble. If you recall, this is the recession was hammering us and people were under difficulty. One of the other shows that was on that I produced, Gene Chatsky, was our financial person. And we heard those same calls too. So Gene was hearing it from more a financial standpoint and Robin was handling the difficulties from an emotional and sometimes spiritual standpoint. So we were able to do what we can where we are with what we had at the time to help people alleviate that. Here we are 10 years later. Right now we're going to head into what seems to be another recession. I mean, it's almost inevitable that's going to happen. We got unemployment at a high rate, you know, because of the virus that will not be named. Everything is shut down. So, you know, here we are 10 years later. And while some of the circumstances have changed, the answers, in my observation, experience, and opinion, the answers to those questions have not, and there's nobody better to deliver it than my friend, Dr. Robin Smith. And here's the deal. So, first of all, if you don't know who she is by now, let me just remind you, she's a licensed psychologist, ordained minister with a PhD in counseling psychology, who has worked with Fortune 500 and 100 companies, sports entertainment professionals. She works with conflict management, diversity and inclusion training, executive performance coaching, and much, much more. And you also probably know her from her best-selling books, the number one New York Times bestseller, Lies at the Altar, The Truth About Great Marriages. Her other titles include Inspirational Vitamins, A Guide to Personal Empowerment, which you can get on her website, www.drrobinsmith.com. You can get those in an email. You should. Her soulful memoir, Hungry, The Truth About Being Full. You've seen her on everything from ABC's Good Morning America, CNN, NBC's The Today Show, the Fox News Channel, the Queen Latifah Show when it was on, which I really enjoyed. She was on that as well. Anderson Cooper, and as the therapist in residence for our Oprah Winfrey. We were only supposed to talk for about 30 minutes, you know, somewhere in there. An hour 15 later, we're still going at it. And she's just incredible. So we caught up on all that stuff, and we'll pick up the interview just catching up 10 years later.
So just very grateful for this moment with you.
We look a little different, Doc, but we're cut from the same cloth.
I was going to say, and maybe as time goes on, not as different as we thought.
You know, and some of the most amazing parts of that is that concept that was brought forth by many hands and many voices and much experience. It was almost like a universal tumbler fell into place, and all the right people at the right time for the right reasons. And I think of those hundreds of shows that you did, and I used to listen to the people calling in such difficulty and such pain.
Oh, yeah.
You're a very straightforward person. I've never professed to have answers for anybody but myself. And the thing that has always stayed with me about you, and the one reason that I think that, you know, I can call pretty much anybody anymore and get them on the podcast, but that's not the point. But the thing that has stuck with me the most is you might be one of the most authentic humans I've ever had a chance to spend time and work with. You don't.
Oh my gosh. Well,
Robin,
that is so humbling.
Well, you don't, but you don't come from theory and all that. You come from your own life experiences, which have been difficult, which then I think creates that bridge of authenticity to people that are looking to seek some counsel or some clarity. That obviously rings true with you.
Well, I bow to that and say thank you. I mean, really, thank you. That, I mean, it is who I am. It's how I'm wired and made. And it is, it's the only thing that works for me. You know, I don't sell it to someone else. I don't think that is someone else's path, but it is my path. I mean, it's really the only path that I know. And so even though I am, you know, educated in books and psychology and, you know, religion, whatever that means, and it is how I've integrated it through, I mean, really profound struggle and suffering, and how that, what I call it, is kind of the meat grinder, where everything went in and then came out as something usable for me and hopefully useful for other people. So thank you so much for that's a very special word at this season of my own reentry.
Yes,
that I will carry. So I needed that, and really honor So thank you for sharing that with me.
Robin, why do you why do you think authenticity doesn't sell as well as, you know, whatever that other shit is? I don't know what they're called.
Yeah.
But I don't know. Why is authenticity such a hard sell?
I think because it is so it's so scarce, because we don't see much of it. It is so unfamiliar that it can catch people off guard, as if, like, all right, how do I connect with it? How do I root in, you know, and when I say root, R-O-O-T, you know, how do I root myself into that kind of dialogue or community? And does it require me to lose something to be it? Mm. I think there's a lot of terror around loss. Like, what does it mean that if I am that way, is it dangerous? Will I end up being harmed? And will I lose? Mm. Because what we see is that, and this is not true, it's a fantasy, but that people who are, I mean, the other shit, whatever we want to call that it is that keeps people safe. It is that which allows people to have a skill set to navigate the world and to navigate complexities. Again, that is not really true, but it is the authentic person who can just feel so unfamiliar, and that people can feel so disarmed by it, that they may gravitate more to the superficial, let's just call it, because it feels easier. And to some extent it is, but it's what I tell couples when, not only couples, but particularly when a couple will say, well, you know, I don't believe in divorce. And I say, okay, that's fine. Then you must believe in the heavy lifting of hard work. Or you believe in eternal suffering, given what you're bringing in.
It's one or the other,
and
right?
So let's talk about, you know, whether or not you believe that if you create a ritual of some sort, that it can build your muscle. It can build your physical muscles. It can build your relational muscles. Then that makes sense. I mean, I get you don't believe in divorce, but now let's talk about, do you believe that you can live free? And that's just a very different concept for people than this very harsh, brash, toxic way of greeting people. So I do, what I have found is that, and it's interesting, I have people from the show, I mean, all those years ago, who will still remember something, who will still email, who will still write, who say, like, this changed my life. I met a woman, a professor at a very, very elite school. I was helping to marry my friend a few years ago, and this person came up and said, yeah, introduced myself. She said, I know who you are. And she said, I am this person. This is what I do. And I was suicidal when I was listening to your show. Had you not been on the air, I don't know that I would be alive. And that was not, I mean, that was not an uncommon piece of feedback, but I think it is what you're saying. What she said is your willingness to be vulnerable yourself.
Yes.
And give skills to help me actualize a different life was transformative. So right now, that's really what I am working to package, shall we say, to take back into the world. And it's a different world than it was when I, you know, was on the air, both television and radio. So everything, you know, all the social media, all of the this. And yet I know that people are still hungry for the same thing. So it's now just, you know, how does that get packaged?
Right.
We're working on a podcast and other things. So it's, so excited about that, just at the very early stages, and here we are with, you know, COVID-19.
Right.
So some, as you said, you know, life happens and then we figure out, okay, well, what I wasn't expecting this, but this is life.
Right,
this
right.
is what happens. We don't expect something happens and now we've got to figure out how do I navigate it.
Before I get into the kind of the big three questions that I have to of ask course. You, as long as I have you here, I'm not going to let you get away without this concept that I have that I need some validation one way or the other on from someone in your your platform. I have this thought that when the Screen Actors writers went on strike and reality shows took over, that humans, the human's mind to discern between reality and produce reality totally went off the deep end.
Mm-hmm.
And that when we sit here and watch these shows that, you know, you've done television, I've done television, we know how production works. But most people don't. And so they see these very highly produced shows with these predictable yet unpredictable outcomes, and they get emotionally connected to them. And I think I've watched this over the years thinking, you know, I'm kind of chuckling behind the scenes that you have any many hours it takes to make it look like people are stuck on an island alone when they're really not. But our mind picks up on this stuff and it becomes our reality. And I think then when real reality takes place, like COVID-19 and people are dropping like flies and we see this on the news, I have this thought, like, we still think it's not real to some degree because we're not in the obituaries. Any thoughts on the difficulty of humans being able to separate reality from the influx and the overflow of the highly produced reality we've been bombarded with?
You know, John, I think that is a profound and really kind of prophetic sharing thought. I mean, I really do, and I think it is more than accurate that the ways in which we separated people from truth and from that which was real and created an illusion created all of the props to make people believe that the illusion was real has really come back to haunt and harm us as a country, and a world, but I'm going to focus right now on the country. So I think it is more than true. And I think, you know, as you even pose the question and the pondering, that this is why re-entering for me is, let's just say, a completely different experience, because the diet that people have been on have been for the last 10 years has made them so sick that when they have something that is healthy and real, they don't know how to ingest it. As a matter of fact, they may be sick initially. And, you know, I'm talking, obviously,
right.
symbolically.
Correct.
But they may feel sick from that which is real because they have become so well metabolized, you know, to this other form of illusion
right.
that they call reality. I mean, so I know, I think it is more true than many things I've heard recently.
So with that in mind, it was a great lead up because I needed to kind of see where this I could position this. And I'm speaking from my own experience here. And 19, every time I say 19, I sound old. So I'm going to go back to 1986. I was in a very, very difficult car accident, to say the least. And I suffered some serious PTSD about 6-8 weeks later when the guy that hit us was a drunk driver, hit us broadside, left the scene of the accident. They left me for dead. I didn't die, obviously, yay. But I found about six.
Yay, for sure, yay.
About 6-8 weeks later, I was in the courtroom, and the guy got off basically with a $25 fine. And something, a trigger, tripped inside me, Robin. That night at midnight, every circuit I had kind of blew it. I actually ended up, and I've written about this, so it's no secret. I ended up at a place called Sheridan Road Hospital here in Chicago, which is basically at the time like One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest. And they were telling me that I had an overload on my nervous system and that it didn't know what to do. So it was having these meltdowns and stuff. And this is called, the first time I ever heard of it, post-traumatic stress disorder. And so they put me on Xanax for a while. That did not go well. And so I was able to mentally work myself off this. And so I'm speaking from my own experience of what it feels like to have an incident, which I thought at the time was an accident. There's a difference, but this event in my life that I felt out of control with, that I could do nothing more about, and that was taking a toll on me physically, mentally, spiritually, and emotionally. And that was called PTSD. And so since that time, and especially in the last 10 years since you and I've talked, the influx of unsocial media, the constant bombardment of stuff we can't do a thing about, that's running down our central nervous systems and our reptilian brainstems are constantly inflamed. Yep. I think I get this thought, and this is I'm a veteran, so there's no disrespect to the veterans who are suffering with this and all that goes along with it. But it seems like we have a low grade fever of PTSD all the time just by being alive.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And John, let me just ask, did you say you are a veteran or you're not?
I am.
You are. That's what I thought.
Yes.
So you have that experience. And did you end up going into combat at all?
No, not at all. I was in from 1980 to 86. It was pretty quiet. I was United States Coast Guard, so I was on helicopters.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
So all quiet.
Yeah. But, you know, I think, and that's why when I saw the little bit from Rita, some of what you wanted to talk about, I was even more drawn. I mean, I wanted to talk with you anyway, but really wanted to enter into this conversation about PTSD as it relates to COVID-19, and as it relates to the lives we are living, or I would say the lives we are not living.
Oh boy, yeah.
Yeah, the lives we are not living. So as you, really described, and thank you for sharing your own story. And, you know, you said earlier when we were talking that, you know, my open sharing is my style, not necessarily yours, but you have shared your vulnerabilities in ways that have felt meaningful and safe for you to do so. And I think that makes a big difference for people to hear that you know about suffering and terror, and you know about ways in which your life took turns that you couldn't control.
Right.
Your feelings, talking about the reptilian brain, I mean, that amygdala that only knows fight or flight or freeze, as I often ask.
And you know what I think, Robin, I know those are the two technical terms, but, you know, I think the third one is?
What's that?
WTF is going on here.
Yep. Yeah. Oh, well, yeah. Well, I was going to say, well, and I think maybe that WTF is the conversation in that old brain that is trying to communicate, do I need to fight or run or do some of both?
Mm-hmm.
Because of the WTF.
Yeah,
I mean, you know, I think that is the foundation that something unimaginable is happening. And I have to figure out in that old brain, you know, that really is a reptile.
Yeah.
And we need to honor that brain. That's the other thing I'd want, you know, us to acknowledge. And I always want to acknowledge that that reptilian brain is what got us here. It's
right.
What has you talking and me talking. So we need to give thanks to that old brain that may not serve us well at times now, but it did keep us alive.
True.
You know, it
yep.
did keep us alive. So when you went to that hospital that you equate with One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest, and in, I have to remember which book, in Hungary, I write about a hospital in the desert, and that was where I went, and there was a woman who, I call her a healer, she was a therapist, but I sought her out, figured out how to get to her in the middle of nowhere, and really called that my own self-hospitalization, where things were too much, and I would say too much of too little, and, you know, and too little of too much, and what I had to do to go and sit with someone to begin to really make sense of my WTFs, of the things that simply made no sense.
Correct.
And yet, they were at my front door and my back door, demanding entrance. You know, and so I, as we talk about trauma, about post-traumatic stress disorder, I think it's essential because a lot of what we see going on, a lot of what I see going on in this country is trauma related. It is trauma driven. It is not just sadness. It is not just garden variety fear, but it's trauma. And there's a difference in terms of how our brain codes trauma and how it codes an unpleasant experience. You know, an unpleasant experience we don't like, and but we feel we can manage it. It doesn't, we don't unravel from an unpleasant experience. From a traumatic experience, we can unravel. And I want to give an example about post-traumatic stress disorder. I met someone, actually, who I'm very close with, but when I first met this person, I talked, it was a family, but I was speaking with the man, and he told me about a major loss that happened in his life and the lives of his children. And he said, but we, you know what, we really did okay. It was my highest several years in my career of business and marketing. My children were on the honor roll. They did better after the trauma than they had done even before. And I looked at him and I said, and there are many faces of a breakdown. There are many ways that we have traumatic events that we do not know are that traumatic because externally, we've coped in a way that the world responds and rewards us. And we have no idea, and in this case, it was the truth, that we are unraveling and that our success itself was a part of the quote-unquote breakdown. So I really want to also remind all of us to not get too comfortable that just because maybe they didn't end up in, you know, the hospital that you mentioned or, you know, a therapist for a long weekend where I was, doesn't mean that they have not had a traumatic event. And just because you have all A's or you, you know, have succeeded by the world standards does not mean that you're not living. Actively living with a traumatic event, really guiding and driving your life.
I will tell you that all these years later, I still have every now and again a slight twinge of I'm still here inside you. And I have to manage it. I don't use any drugs or anything like that. I'm good with that. But it's a very rare occasion. For many years, my peripheral vision, I couldn't even see a bird fly out of the corner of my eye because it tripped a trigger of where the car came from. And to this day, something will happen. And the reason I bring this up is because I've learned, as you just said, and I may have even heard you said this years, say this years ago, that, you know, trying to hold down trauma does not work. Trying to hide it, shop it away, screw it away, drink it away, smoke it away, whatever, it does not work. It's just putting, a, you know, like an a Band-Aid on an amputation. And so here we are in this time where people are literally on lockdown. Never had this before. And I've always said, you know, you squeeze oranges, you get orange juice, you squeeze humans, all kind of shit comes out.
And, that's right.
And we are being squeezed, Robin, like never before. However, just before you and I spoke, I got a phone call from a longtime friend, and she's in her mid-80s, and we had a nice chat, and I said, how you doing? She goes, oh, I'm fine. I grew up during polio. And so for her, the reference point was very different. We don't have those reference points. Is that... Part of the problem is we don't have the reference points of things that have been somewhat difficult in our time and we don't know what to do with it?
I think we don't have the reference point for someone to say, I grew up during polio. I've also heard Holocaust survivors right now who are saying, yes, this is terrifying, but I survived the Holocaust.
Right.
So you can survive things that feel insurmountable. You can survive things that are crushing. You can survive things that you feel simply will kill you, but they won't. But that comes from people who survived things like polio, the Holocaust. There are people who have survived physical, you know, traumas as well. And I'm thinking of someone I was speaking with who is a rape survivor. And as scary as this is, she said, you know, I have this internal message that I am a survivor, and I'm living from that message, not from what I hear on the news headlines every day and every night. So I do think that your dear friend, and bless her, I mean, really bless her, her heart and body and soul, but I do believe that in this current culture we're in, which goes back to our earlier conversation about this reality TV era that doesn't seem to want to come to an end. and yet the coronavirus just showed up and said, okay, now let me show you what's real. And let's get real with how to survive this, how to manage ourselves emotionally, relationally. People are at home with people they haven't been connected with for years, people they don't necessarily even like. And I mean spouses or, you know, in-laws who you could go to work to get away from them, or your own parents, and now, or your children. And now you're, you know, locked in together. So I am sure that there is something missing from our constitution, if you understand what I mean. I mean, from our inner soul constitution that would tell us this is huge. We need to figure out what we can do that's in our control. Do that responsibly, repeatedly, religiously, if you will. And the things that are out of our control, let them go.
Yeah. I think that's one of the kind of the prelude to the to kind of the second concept or question I had, because I think we've pretty firmly established that on some level we all have this ongoing pushback against what we think reality is or isn't, and the expectation that life should be different, I think. And I learned a long time ago that expectation and reality rarely line up. And the more you expect life to be different, and it isn't, the more you suffer. It's like a, some old, you know, Zen koan thing. You know, the more you expect that life should be one way and it's not, the more you suffer. The more you accept the reality of life and your role in it, it may be painful, but you don't suffer. It's a different energy. But the concept of, you know, here we are in it, we're dealing with it, it's dealing with us, it's going to, you know, do the thing that it does. It, in many ways, watching the news to me is just the biggest waste of time at this point. And I'm in the media. I've been in the media 25 years, and I am not impressed, because like with everything else, I've been behind the scenes. I know that it's about ratings and revenue, and the more you can get people glued to your station, the more you're charging for advertising, and that's across the board. And so when people get stuck on this and they have to know what's going on and the latest death toll and all that's going on, I'm thinking it's just feeding that PTSD without them even knowing it. And so how do we begin, and I think you just helped with this a little bit, how do we begin to shift our perspective away from what's happening in the world to what's happening in my world? It's difficult for a lot of people, but what do you suggest?
Love the question, and love where it will invite us in this moment, and for all of your listeners to understand that they've got agency, personal agency, and choice. You know, Scott Peck, Dr. Scott Peck, who wrote The Road, those of us who have read The Road Less Traveled or People of the Lie or many of his other books, but Dr. Peck said at the very beginning, I think it's the first line.
It's the first line. Robin, it's the first line.
You know it is.
Oh, sure. Go ahead.
Life is difficult. I don't think it says hard. I think it says, and I have a copy probably right here. I'm going to look as we're talking because I wasn't thinking about it, but I keep it with me. But that life is, and I'll confirm what it is in just a moment, but that life is difficult. And what Dr. Peck was saying is that, in The Road Less Traveled, is that if we understand that life is difficult, if we understand that life is hard, and we go into life understanding that, then the distress we feel, and which often can cause mental distress, even mental illness, mental disease, mental dis-ease, if we understand that life is hard, then we are not warring against reality.
Right. So, Robin, I'm going to stop you and read you that first paragraph from this incredible book that I suggest everybody read.
Please. I'm glad. I'm glad you got it. Yep. And then I won't have to go look for it. Okay.
M. Scott Peck's timeless classic, The Road Less Traveled, A New Psychology of Love, Traditional Values, and Spiritual Growth. The first paragraph, when you open the book, it says this, quote, life is difficult. This is a great truth, one of the greatest truths. It is a great truth because only when we truly see this truth can we transcend it. Once we truly know that life is difficult, once we truly understand and accept it, then life is no longer difficult. Powerful.
It is so powerful. It is so powerful. And so, you know, this is what, John, we're talking about, even around the trauma that you were talking about, your car accident. Yeah. I was in two car accidents that also came out of nowhere. I mean, really out of nowhere. And I was hurt, injured severely in both of these accidents. I've recovered and I'm doing much better, but it's been a long journey back to my health. Mm. And there are these triggers, but I want to remind us that triggers, when someone says they pushed my button, you know, that triggered me. We want to realize that the important kind of place to underline is they pushed my button. So we want to know, okay, wait a minute, these are my buttons. Now I want to begin to understand, where is the piece of ownership? And that's why I said agency. What is it that I need to learn about me, not about the other? What is it I need to learn about the way in which I manage anger or mismanage anger, that I manage depression or mismanage depression, that I avoid conflict or create conflict? So I watch, and I think watching the news, as you said right now, with the coronavirus and the death count, look, we know that this is a very serious and dangerous and deadly virus. There's no question about that. And there are things that we need to be doing, from significant and consistent hand washing to the other tips and tools that I won't go into right now that are important, and we have to take responsibility to do them in our own lives. And I want to ask everyone who is listening right now, what are you feeding your mind and your spirit daily? Because what we put in, John, is what comes out. So if we have the news feeds on our phone and it's dinging and ringing and clinging and doing all of that, bombarding us, how could we, as you said, redirect our minds and our energy elsewhere? Because what we focus on, and I tell people this, what you focus on grows, and what grows has dominion over you.
Mm-hmm.
And so we've got to ask ourselves, is it time to refocus or focus anew on ourselves in a different kind of way? And I am of the opinion, and there is actually a lot of documentation around this as well. There's a quote that I use, which is, whatever I thought life was, it's not.
Hmm.
So whatever I thought love was, it's not. Now, it doesn't mean it's worse or better, it just means it's different.
Mm.
And so if we can become curious about what it is we can learn about ourselves and our own lives, then we begin to create an internal constitution that can weather, maybe not weather quite as robust as your 80-year-old beloved friend, but we begin to create a inner constitution of strength based on feeding ourselves information about ourselves that builds the self instead of builds the image of someone other than ourselves, if that makes sense.
It does. And, you know, this is the perfect place for me to insert my own theory. And it's not just a theory. It's actually, I've done research on this for the last 22, 23 years, somewhere in there. I tend to, especially now, to stay away from people and have the social distancing. I'll often take walks in cemeteries. I find it very quiet, very relaxing. Mm-hmm. Nobody bothers me. And I'm always reminded of the brevity of life, the little dash. And some people get a lot and some people get a little. But one thing, Robin, I have never seen in 20 plus years of keeping count. I was just out yesterday, matter of fact, walking. And I thought, well, there it is again. I did a TED Talk a couple years ago in Ontario. And it was about human math and the time we get to be here as opposed to the time we're really here. Life expectancy, which is how long you live, but what do you expect out of life compared to the time you really get? And one of the things I finished with was, in all the cemeteries I've been at, never once have I seen Democrat, Republican, or Independent on a headstone. Ever. And so if it's not that important to be etched in stone forever, how did we allow it, and how do we allow it in our own lives to be such a dividing force when we're not going to be here long enough to make it matter, really? Fascinating stuff.
You know, yeah, I think walking through cemeteries can have so much power, and you just shared one of the examples. I mean, that the things that really matter are not the things most of us are stuck on right now. And really frozen and married to right now, and the power of what you said in terms of life expectancy. I mean, what are we expecting out of our lives in this in this moment, even in this moment of the coronavirus? I mean, given that we don't know who will live and who won't, I think what is, for me, a challenging opportunity is that, of course, I hope and pray that I remain healthy and the people I love and care for remain healthy, and people I don't even know and love remain healthy and well. And I am also challenged, meaning in a good way, to say, okay, but this is the moment that I'm given, and how do I want to live this moment? And do I want to live this moment in opposition to not only other people, but you said this, in opposition to cultivating, or we both said this, in opposition to cultivating a life that will have made sense when that dash is made and the other numbers are put on our headstone, if we have one. Mm-hmm. I mean, will it have made sense that we were here?
Right.
And I feel that this virus, while people, you know, we don't want it to be here, this is the reality. We can't do anything, not right now, that is here. What we can do something about right now is that we are here. Not that the virus is here,
right,
but that we are here and alive with opportunities to figure out how to engage ourselves in a life that has more meaning. You know, I know that there's a lot of, there are people who love this current president, that love President Trump. There are people who hate him. There are not a lot of people that are kind of in the middle. Mm-hmm. But I will say this, that I think is so important, and I shared this, I've shared it a number of times. Where I live, I'm in Philadelphia, as you know, and where I live, there are signs, because there are people who are Democrats and Republicans and independents, but I saw a sign once that had, on one home, it had like All Lives Matter, and it shared, it was very affirming of everyone, you know, every difference in the world. And I love that sign. And next to that sign, in the next yard, was a sign that said, No Trump Zone. And there were beautiful flowers. This was last spring, beautiful flowers in that yard. And I remember thinking about that No Trump Zone sign with the beautiful flowers, because it felt that the beauty of nature was so different than the aggression of the sign. Mm. And I do want all of us, whether it's, you know, President Trump, because there are people, again, who hate him, and then the people that hated President Obama, and, you know, just pick right. somebody, and right. then we find hate, right. you know? And I really am inviting us in this moment when there is a virus that is so deadly and dangerous to invite ourselves, instead of focusing on, you know, what administration we'd like to blame and which administration we would like to crown as blameless, that we ask ourselves, to me, what is the biggest question of life? Which is, why would I waste this moment distracting myself from myself when it is the self I have that can help me navigate not only this challenge, but all the challenges to come? And so to not give our power to anyone, but to figure out how to do what I call make a U-turn. A U-turn in spiritual language can be seen as repentance. I don't mean that in terms of traditional sin, if you will. Mm-hmm. I do mean that it is sinful to neglect the self and create gods, if you will, who have nothing to do with who we are as individuals. And so I just invite myself, I invite you, and I invite all of the people who are tuning in and listening to make a U-turn today. I mean, if you passed your exit and you found yourself stuck in an attitude, in a way of thinking and believing and being, whether that is political or relational, whether it is about someone in your family who is a jerk, and maybe they really, really, really are a jerk. I'm not doubting that they're a jerk. What I am saying is that this is your moment to figure out how to navigate life so that that jerk doesn't take one more breath of what can be your precious life and meaningful existence here, and not hand it over, not to a president, not to a parent, not to any power other than the power we call the self.
Now, the radio producer guy in me, if I put that hat on, this would be the end of our conversation, because I don't know how to top that. However, this I am not the producer of your show. I'm still the host of this show, and I have one more question.
All right.
I have a question. And I ask pretty much everybody this. Question is, it's kind of like, so after all we've talked about here, everything you've written in your book, Lies at the Altar, and Hungry, and I know you're rolling out the fantastic, people need to go to drrobinsmith.com and sign up for inspirational vitamins, because that way you can feed yourself on a daily basis with this kind of info from Dr. Robin. But all of that stuff is a resource for people. When it's quiet, when you're kind of with yourself, and you get to the point where you're started reviewing a little bit of your own stuff, what's the big aha for you? I mean, you've had this path that is yours, and you've claimed it and you've owned it. Other times, I'm sure you've dismissed it, said I don't want anything to do with it, but you keep coming back to the path. I heard some of my Native American friends say, the path never goes away. We're the ones that stray. The path is always there. But what's the big aha for you at this point in your life, after all you've accomplished, all the things that you thought should have been different that weren't, the pieces of the puzzle that remain? What is there for you at this point?
Yeah, I thank you for the question and the space in this moment to breathe anew. I still love nature. Nature is the space and place that nurtures me no matter what. It's the place I go to. It's my rock and my cradle and my playmate. It's my space, really, to breathe and be. And so I was walking yesterday, and I saw a woodpecker, which I'm actually going to post this. I tried to get a a little short video of the woodpecker who was just pecking away and pecking away and allowed me to get closer and closer and kind of looked at me, and I looked at the woodpecker, and then it went back to, pecking away. So the takeaway for me yesterday, but also in this moment, this season of my life, is no matter what happens, as long as the moment is worthy of me to show up and peck away, to show up and I say in lies at the altar like a grown-up, but to wake up. I mean, to wake up, to show up, to grow up, and to rise up. And that really is the space that I'm living, that even when things, because there are still a lot of things, you know, John, and I said this to you before we officially started talking, that I am making sense of as I re-enter my career. And my mother is older. She's been doing well until recently, and now her health is challenged more than it has been. And I look at everything that has happened and all the things that did not happen, and I feel like the invitation for me from, you know, God, from the nature, but from my own spirit and soul is, Robin, just show up. And it's enough. Just show up. It's enough. I'm enough. It'll be enough. And so that level of comfort and freedom is so different than it was, you know, 10 years ago. Because it didn't feel like showing up was enough. It didn't feel, I didn't feel that if I just showed up with my heart open, the things I know, the things I don't know, the things I do well, the things I don't do well, the lessons I've learned, the lessons I thought I learned, that when I show up and I realize, ooh, didn't learn what I thought I knew, got to go back and keep learning. And but that means that showing up, to me, is this key and a fundamental piece of grace. And I would add this, showing up is essential, and showing up with some deep self-compassion and accountability. I've often said that self-compassion without accountability can be impotent. It can go nowhere over time. And accountability without self-compassion can be brutal and harsh. So that showing up, being wholeheartedly compassionate to myself, accountable to myself, allowing me to be compassionate for other people, and accountable also to other people, and also hold other people accountable. But none of that would be possible, John, if I don't show up.
So here's what it stacks up for me after listening to that, and I've listened to it three times since we did the show and taped it on Thursday. Robin and I talked about this in the interview, and I would just want to, you know, hammer this point home one more time. When reality bites us in the ass, when that shark swims around and catches us in the hindquarters, and we go, oh, this is real. Because it's not our problem till it's our problem. Meaning when things are happening to somebody else, that's their problem. That's not my problem. And then when it becomes your problem, you want to know, why didn't somebody figure out the answer to the problem? So the answer to the problem is exactly how she finished our conversation about showing up for yourself. All the rest of it's details. And since none of us, not me, not Robin, anybody listening to the show, knows when their expiration date is, to constantly and consistently drench your you know, your central nervous system in news you can't use, argue with people you don't know over things you can't control. That's like why they'd lock you up. And in some ways, we're in that prison because of all these things. So what today was about was a clearing episode for me. She is a voice of authenticity and strength that is so needed right now. And she is fearless in this. She is all about sticking her nose into the wind. I got the highest regard for that. And it's okay if you don't agree with everything that's going on in the world. That's totally fine. But to live your life as if all that stuff outside of you depends on it is totally ass backwards. What matters most is what's within you, not what's outside of you. 99.9% of what's going on in the world, as you can tell right now, you can't do an effing thing about. You can't control any of it. And people don't like that. The only person that I know that likes change is a wet infant. The rest of us hate it. But it's the one constant that we never get used to. And so I hope what you take away from this show, and here's the thing, right? You're listening to this. It is brought to you by the subscribers who fund this show. It's $20 a month. It's like buying a pizza. And because of them, you get a chance because of the greater good value of this. I'm not locking it down for just the subscribers. They understand why I do this. Because of what they do, and they plunk down $20 a month, you get a chance to listen to this on them because they get it. And that's what this information is about. If you just listen to this, go, oh, that was really great, but you don't apply any of this, you've wasted your time here. Don't waste your time because you don't have any time to waste. And remember this, no matter what's going on, if you go within, you'll never go without. Until next time, stay the f*** home. Adios.